The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Okay. Welcome to We the People Talk Radio.
We're like, okay, are we here? Are we
ready? Here. Good morning. You know, we normally don't date our programs because the topics that we bring to you are timeless and applicable to anyone everywhere. But today is September 11th. It is the 10th anniversary of the greatest tragedy that ever took place on American soil. So we definitely don't want the show to go much further without recognizing.
In our lifetime.
You're joining your hosts, Aaron Ryan, Elizabeth Woodward, and our great sound engineer, Bob Martin. Good morning, everybody.
And we have our sidekick, Bill, out in the other
room.
Yeah,
Bill is the mastermind when it comes to the music that we add to the show.
Except good for today. Morning. Bob's the mastermind of music today, aren't you?
Got some special 9/11.
Bill and I were loitering at an NRA dinner last night, so we didn't get to do the music last night.
That's all right. So Bob is stepping in.
Not to get off topic here, did you hear about the assembly sending a banning a concealed carry bill to Jerry Brown on the last day of the session on Friday night?
Oh, sure. We call those gut and amend. That's when the bill goes in as one thing, you know?
It just comes out as something else.
Innocuous whatever and then comes out as something horrible. They were in session till like 1 o'clock in the morning.
Hmm.
What is that?
Just slipped that one under the radar at the last possible moment.
Yeah, and it had nothing, I'm sure it had nothing to do with the bill that it went in as.
Yeah.
Yeah, isn't it?
Likely.
But the legislature is out until January. Yay!
Yeah, they can't do any damage for a while.
Except for Jerry Brown has a pile on his desk, so we'll see what he sends. So just call Jerry Brown and tell him no on everything.
Yeah, there, and you're safe that way. So we are at KCNR 1460, the home of Shasta Redding, Free Fire Media. Give us a call. Our number is 605-4567. If you're out of the area code is 530. You can join us on the chat room, and we're streaming live at wethepeopleradio.us. What you'll find there is our media page. Tells you all about our guests today, our topics, and all of the archived shows pretty much from the beginning. And we're quickly coming up on a one-year anniversary here. So we hope that you've enjoyed the show up to this point and found it informative.
And if you haven't, it's your fault because you should have called us and encouraged us to do different programs that you wanted to hear.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we do that all the time. We take requests every day
from people. And we've made it really easy for you to share all of the information on the website and the past shows by emailing links from each of the shows to anybody, anywhere. So it couldn't be much easier than that. So, again, welcome. And
it's my niece's birthday.
It is. How old is she?
She is, I don't know, she's in high school. She got a new rifle for her birthday.
Nice.
She lives in Texas. They're going on a pig hunt. So this morning when we got back from the NRA dinner, it was pretty funny. I'm checking my email, and I opened up this picture, and there she is standing there with this big rifle.
Oh, that's great.
So I called her on my way in. I'm like, so who'd you send that to? She goes, well, I sent it to my niece and nephew in the Bay Area, and they were like, what is that? I said, yeah, I know.
Yeah, big difference between the Bay Area.
You and I live in places where that's normal some places that's not normal. And if Jerry Brown has his way, I guess it won't be normal here either.
Yeah. Little by little. You know, I think that 10 years ago, almost 45 minutes from now, when 9/11 actually happened, we started losing our personal rights right then and there.
Oh, it was long before that. You know it.
Yeah, but
we need a conspiracy sidekick so they can pop up out of their thing and go, it was back when.
Yeah, yeah.
I can hear already. Mark, I'm with you. 1913, Federal Reserve. Okay,
yeah, there
you
go. Yeah. Yeah, that gave them the impetus to start stripping away the Fourth Amendment.
Well,
9/11.
Yeah. Yeah, the Patriot Act. I like it. You call it something that, you know, makes everybody want to jump on board after something really scary and then.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, big fans of governmental overreach, aren't we? So we're going to talk about that today. Today we're focusing on the Klamath Dam removal. And you know, this is one of those things, and we're going to probably bring this up a couple times this morning, but this is one of those things that people, when they heard about it 20 years ago, our guest heard about this 20 years ago, and he's like, you know what, I think they're going to do it. And people said, no, they're never going to do it. People still say, no, they're never going to do it. And there are plans in place to take out all the dams in California, including Shasta Dam, which is a really big dam. And people still, no, they'll never do that. I'll tell you what, Spotted Owl, no, they'll never shut down logging. Of course they did. This is kind of along that same trail. And so why don't we have Rex pipe up at this point and see where he wants to start. We talked yesterday and he said, well, I don't know if we have 2 hours of material. I was like, okay.
You know, all of our
guests, we do.
All of our guests say that, but it's amazing. Once they start talking, 2 hours is not enough.
Exactly.
Good morning, Rex.
Good morning. How are you this fine day?
Oh, hey, it sounds like we've got our sound all situated there. How are we doing, Bob? Can we hear everybody?
It took a few attempts, but I think we're doing all right. So,
so Rex,
takes a village around here.
Rex, you are up in the North State. Where are you, and what do you do? Aaron has had the pleasure of meeting and talking with you, and
it's kind of the reverse. The pleasure has been mine. We actually live on the Klamath River, right close to the Oregon border. Immediately below where Iron Gate Dam now exists, before and after, I'm one of four generations who've lived on in and with the Klamath. In the location that basically is the focal point of dam's rhetoric regarding Klamath conditions and what's happening. I can say offhand, and obviously I'm not a public speaker. So
but you play one on TV, don't you? We all do.
Yeah, we're all pretending.
We're not real radio hosts either, so, well, no, there we all are.
And that's the truth.
And the people who've tuned in are like, oh, no, not another one of those shows.
I think you do a superb job. But another thing that I would like to say up front is that we actually, unlike the proponents of that I've run into regarding dams removal in the Klamath and the events that are progressing to date, we receive nothing for our opinion. We have no benefit, realize no benefit from it. In the years that we've been trying to educate the people around as far as the Klamath, the history, the background, the current realities, all of that has been done with I and many other people has been done at our own expense and our own time and effort in doing this. We get no reward, whereas almost every proponent that I've run into that's been an activist in this process have all been paid or reimbursed personally for their participation in this. And I think that in itself says a lot.
And most of them are not going to be affected.
That's right.
I mean, they all live out of the area. See, just so people kind of have an idea, I had met you before, you know, we went on the dam tour, but then, the 25th of August, a group of us went around to all the different dams and stopped at different places along the way and talked to people who were going to be affected by all of these changes, should they come about. And you and I were standing back up there at Copco Dam and got to talking, and I thought, I gotta get Rex on the radio. He's got a lot of information. People don't realize. They think that... Well, I think anymore there are a lot of us, if it says it's for environmental reasons, we're like, ugh, you know, we know that already.
Oh, it's instant response anymore.
Absolutely. But I mean, I think even people that are pretty, might be kind of friendly to that whole thing, I think when they really hear the facts about what's going on, and what it won't do, and what they say it will do, and actually, scientifically, what it will not do, I think most people would oppose this.
Well, if removal of the dams, the reason that we're here, I'm personally in the water over 50 times a year for over 50 years, as my grandfather before me. They were in a extremely economically depressed area, particularly since timber industry was destroyed nearly 30 years ago. The main reason that we continue to live here are for the love of the Klamath and the community that we reside in. The Klamath literally runs in our blood. I actually was taught to swim in the Klamath before I could walk. The river, the ecology, the environment is what gives us our quality of life for remaining here. Sustainability is what it's always been about. I've never seen, and I shouldn't get on the bandwagon, but never saw during the 50s when we had the prior to Iron Gate, when the banks were being ripped out and the erosion and devastation was taking place in the middle of snowstorms and in the dark. I don't remember ever seeing any of these proponents standing next to us trying to help recover and preserve and protect the
selective environmentalism.
It's wonderful, and I'm not saying that there aren't many who are very dedicated and citizens that are out there and who care, but the fact is, I don't know of anyone who has dedicated and sacrificed more to preserve the environment than the multi-generation residents along the river and in our region. Their quality of life, the future of their families, the sustainability of the natural environment, all are predicated on maintaining that environment. If I truly thought that removal of the dams would improve the Klamath environment and bring this purported restoration back that is absolutely ludicrous, it's contradicted by all of the history, the experience, and now the current science that's out there. But if I thought it would truly improve things, I would probably support it. The fact of the matter is that the dams, in a simple statement, the dams that are there were put in place largely to enhance the regional environment from the prior natural conditions that existed. And it worked. In my time, the last dam that was put in was Iron Gate Dam that was put in 62. The others have been in place for largely 100 years.
Oh, so that is actually in your life. It's in my lifetime, too.
Oh, I was in the water before and after Iron Gate.
No kidding.
That's strictly from personal experience.
All right, Rex, we got to cut you off here and come right back in 2 minutes. We need to thank our advertisers so we don't wind up just being an advertising program. We'll do that really quick and then come right back and we'll talk to Rex the Dam Hugger. Actually, all us smart people are dam huggers this morning, aren't we? So you're listening to KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
Where were you when the world stopped turning on that September day? Were you in the yard with your wife and children or working on some stage in L.A.? Did you stand there in shock at the sight of that black smoke rising against that blue sky? Did you shout out in anger and fear for your neighbor? Did you just sit down and cry?
This is KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today. Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
That warms the heart and brings tears to the eyes. Welcome back to We the People Talk Radio. We want you to join us. Give us a call at 530-605-4567 or join our chat room. We're streaming live at wethepeopleradio.us. Thank you, Bob, for the wonderful music.
Our music is like our other guest this morning. We have our kind of our 9/11 commemorative music. That's sort of our guest as we come in and out on all the breaks. That's very awesome. Yeah. Thanks, Bob.
Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. It was really a labor of love to put this together. Music touches people on so many levels, and certainly it's a big part of remembering 9/11 and where you were when it happened, that sort of thing.
Exactly. That's very cool. And someone had made mention that this topic about the dams wasn't really about 9/11, not that we were required to do a program about that. But I thought, it is about 9/11, because honestly, you take those dams out up there, and you destroy lots of people's lives on a variety of levels.
And I wanted to point out that we are about fiscal responsibility, limited government. And adherence to the Constitution.
Yeah, not no government.
And Aaron, I don't know if you want to share what you were sharing with me off the air about what's going on in Siskiyou County with the different agencies. I don't know if you're privy.
Oh, well,
if you want to talk limited government, hear this, folks.
Well, I think most of our listeners kind of follow these land use issues. And so the dam removal is a piece of a big picture. And the big picture, the lever being used is the coho salmon, very much like the spotted owl. The spotted owl was the lever used to lift up logging and knock it off its axis. And the coho salmon is popping up as they're using it for everything. We now have the Department of Fish and Game. We got them. We've got NOAA, National. Help me out, Rex. What's NOAA? National Oceanic and
Atmospheric.
And atmospheric. Yeah. Then we have the NIMS guys. We had an agent from the Department of Commerce show up at some people at a ranch last week. Read the people their rights. For nothing. I mean, they wouldn't tell them what for exactly.
So you said there were at least 9 state and federal agencies
descending upon them. And then a guy told me last night in Wairika at the NRA dinner, told me that they're spotting UN vehicles up there now.
See, and what people don't realize is that once they, if they're successful in doing what they want to do up there, they start heading south. It has nothing to do with anything that the people in the Great Scott Valley and Wairika and Siskiyou County have done. They've done nothing.
No.
This is about taking over the land.
Well, they thought they were going to run in and mow them over, but that's actually not working out so well. I think that's why I like going up there so much. It's like, you guys are feisty, Rex. and you guys are really smart. You have tons of actual accredited scientists and experts on these topics, and you guys debunk their science. I mean, it's not like you're just sitting there giving your opinion. There's real science to say that these things don't work. Before we wind up having to take a break again, talk to us about before the dam and after the dam, like where we kind of left off last time.
Yeah, so what's it going to look like?
No, well, like,
absolutely.
What was it like before?
Prior to the dams, in general, the river system is actually an inverse system, as I'm sure people are now becoming aware of. It is atypical of almost all river systems. The upper area, the further away you get, the more high desert, low rainfall conditions it becomes. It's the coastal range with the influence from the high volumes of precipitation and the cool, clear waters from there that are conducive for the salmon habitat. This area that we live in is high desert. It has never been conducive for salmon. It is a transitional zone that where on our property, which is immediately below Iron Gate at this point, by the time the salmon reach here, they're already, even in the presently improved water quality conditions and habitat, they're already dying from by the time they reach here under arduous conditions. I a dear friend of ours that ran the hatchery at Iron Gate until retirement for the longest term. I asked him, knowing the history of the area, that salmon were never known in any numbers above Spencer Creek, which is where Copco Lake is located. And one of the reasons why that was the site that was chosen is because they were not known above there. I asked how far he thought the very best condition salmon would ever reach, given free rein up into the upper area. And he said he truly felt the best condition that was received there, if they made it to Copco Lake, it'd be lucky. That was the known conditions at the time. Our history has always said that our connections. I spoke with people as a child who were born in the late middle 1800s, long before the project, both Indian and immigrant that were here. The stories were all consistent throughout the region. You speak to almost any of the long-term the multi-generational families here, and those consistent who aren't benefiting from this project.
That's a really good caveat. I'm going to start using that too.
It unfortunately,
it's a big deal.
It's pounded itself in. It's become so obvious after years of dealing with the people. That seems to be the biggest differentiation of any. But prior to the project, the upper basin was a huge swamp. In fact, you've got documentation from people like Gibbs, Fremont, Ogden, Everman, Leachrich, Boyle, all who were extremely well-educated people versed in the sciences and who documented areas up there pre any kind of human impact, European impact. And it was a horrendous area that was quoted as being hell on earth in most places. The marsh, the Tule Lake Marsh, was a closed system with the Lost River up there. And so it was large and very shallow and is all volcanic soil. It has an unusual problem also because of that high mineral content, that it is extremely high in phosphorus, which is a rarity. All of our soil in this upper region does. The exposure to the water actually is the nutrient that allows for the algae conditions, the mineral absorption. There's many geothermal springs up there that contributed boron, arsenic. In the early days of my grandfather was a prospector, they used to actually get the mercury for amalgamation. They panned it out of the sands up at Klamath Falls.
Kidding.
It was a natural occurrence from the geothermal input in the area. And, they still heat part of Klamath Falls with the hot springs that are there. In order to try and improve the region, the disease conditions with mosquitoes were horrendous. And it isn't like it was a great food-producing area for it, because the native tribes on many of the incursions that went through of explorers into the area described that the tribes were actually frequently starving during in fact, some of the explorers barely made it through the area, not able to find game or food to survive. This is a transitional zone, and while you hear this great term of biodiversity, that's why they have to preserve it, the context is ludicrous. It is. It is a beautiful area. That's why we're here, and it does have tremendous biodiversity. The reason it does is because it's transitional. That means it doesn't stay the same in any one place. We're extremely prone to drought conditions. Prior to the project, the Klamath River itself used to go subsurface or completely dry, for all intents, up above us in the upper canyon. That was pre-project. That's one of the other reasons the project was being designed. It was to improve the water flows to the Klamath. It was to consolidate waters, remove disease conditions, gain productive land, and contribute part of the water from that closed system marsh into the Klamath to allow flows in late summer that often didn't exist before to help augment it. And it also raised then Upper Klamath Lake, which is a huge lake. It's I think it's 58,000 acres in size. By deepening that, it's an average of like 6-7 feet deep. By allowing an additional, by increasing and allowing an additional 6 foot of storage, they were able to supplement water, give some additional water both for storage for late summer and for irrigation purposes. In order to accomplish this magnificent effort to improve the environment, they had to have power to support the pumping. They made an agreement with a company, and this is 1905 we're talking, 1902 when they started the discussion. They made an agreement with Pacific Power to bring them in, that they would support them in putting in COPCO in exchange for the low-cost power to operate the project, which in turn provided consistent and additional water in the Klamath for both the power company to produce more power to exist and to ensure continual flows of water down the Klamath. It worked. It worked tremendously well, and they had a relicensing on a 50-year cycle that had to take place. Well, that took place in the 50s. When that relicensing took place, most of the people that were here knew the conditions, had lived in the conditions from the project, before the project, and there was no question as to the benefit of the dams. The only problem was is that there wasn't enough capacity. That even at that time, while it helped the flood conditions that happened repetitively here because of our unique weather conditions, that it helped tremendously, but it wasn't enough. We still had repeated damage because they didn't have the capacity to attenuate the flows enough to be able to prevent the damage that occurred.
Okay, hold that thought, Rex. Got to say thanks to our advertisers one more time. We will be right back with Rex. We'll be talking about the Klamath River dams. And on the break here, I would encourage you to go to wethepeopleradio.us, scroll down just a little bit, and there's a map you can blow up. It's got a picture of where the river runs, where all the dams are, and so you'll have actually a visual, if you'd like, for what we're talking about. Be right back with you in 2 minutes here at KCNR, 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
Can't see nothing in front of me. Can't see nothing coming up behind. Make my way through this darkness. Can't feel nothing but this chain that binds me. Lost track of how far I've gone. How far I've gone, how high I've climbed. On my back's a 60-pound stone. On my shoulder, half mile of line. Come on up for the rising. Come on up, lay your hands in mine. Come on up for the rising. Come on up for the rising tonight. Left the house this morning.
The hotline is open on KCNR 1460. 530-605-4567.
Right, have you? That day, see your homeland under fire and her people blown away. Have you forgotten when those towers fell? We had neighbors still inside, going through living hell. And we vowed to get the ones behind Bin Laden. Have you forgotten?
I don't know what I can say to that. I do want to say thank you very much to Bob. And Bob and Aaron and I and Bill sitting outside monitoring the show, we all are pleased to bring you this show.
And fitting this morning, we wound up having to lock ourselves in because there was a crazy guy out on the sidewalk when we were on our way in.
So we thank
so
you.
So we got to call the police first thing this morning.
But we thank you for listening. It's a special day today, and as it always is, it just makes me
hard really, not to listen to this music without tearing up,
I
isn't
know,
it?
Man? Yeah,
nice job, Bob.
Just sort of reiterates the fact that we're all putting some time in here and fighting this battle, and we want you to jump on board with us.
Absolutely. And, you know, why not work with things you can lay your hands on? I would encourage you to go for a tour up in Siskiyou County and drive up to Iron Gate Dam. It's not really that far off the beaten path. How far is it, Rex? If people left I-5 and went up that way, it's not that far.
8 miles off the freeway.
There you go. There's a hatchery there and all sorts of good stuff. And on the way, you can see, actually, what people have done along the river. The way that they would go from the highway, would they go by Jim Burney's place?
Yes, absolutely. They're just above our location.
Yeah, and so Jim's got the Fishhook restaurant right there. And I cannot remember the name of the resort right there. I remember the name of the restaurant. What's its resort?
Blue Heron Resort.
The Blue Heron. It's beautiful. I mean, you totally can't miss it. It's beautiful grass all along the side of the river with a big shade cover. And seriously, 18 of us went and ate lunch there. We all ordered, and I think they had lunch to us in like 6 minutes. It was awesome. He bought the place, fixed it up, made it a place where people can take their campers and stuff right along the river there. And should they take out the dam, that just, I guess, just washes away.
Well, under the current projection, they just actually informed him that from the research they've now been doing, because the claim has been that the dams provide no flood protection at all. And, of course, we've lived through that. And no, that is absolutely ridiculous. It's a tremendous benefit. That's one of the main reasons that the locals supported Iron Gate going in to complete that necessary storage or retention capacity, attenuation capacity of the river. And they've denied that throughout the entire process, and now they're saying with engineering that's been provided originally from one of the volunteers done one of the residents in the region who's a civil engineer, they finally acknowledge that yes, it probably does attenuate that flood, and that yes, under that scenario that Jim Burney is very likely going to be zoned now under the flood condition, under flood zone. And that's what's going to happen to so many of the people up and down the river. That Iron Gate, as we were saying in the completion, when they put that in, it was a tremendous success. Even in some of the record-setting floods we've had ever since then, in our location here, we have never seen the riparian damage that took place. We have basalt, adobe, magnesium-based soil. My grandfather used to call it brown water. When it would in wintertime, when it becomes saturated, it has no stability. On the fragile edges of the Klamath in our region, it has adobe doesn't transport water very well, and so you had a very narrow line of riparian vegetation. And it was very unstable. It could not take the repetitive sudden increases in flow from spring thaw that would often come down in such a flood. It would make a battering ram and take out everything, all vegetation and all assets, bridges all the way down to the coast. We've never had that kind of damage in our region, even with those floods, since Iron Gate was put in, and I've seen that personally. That was even more the case prior to the dams going in 100 years ago. The salmon that went in, we were talking about that too, were never known above Spencer Creek. I'd mentioned that. Were never known in numbers in the upper basin at all, primarily because of the poor water quality up above there. And the physical impediments of the Keno reefs and several other obstructions, they were very rarely ever known to be able to even get above. That's been documented and known forever, one of the reasons for the location there. Iron Gate, in our area that's so drought-prone, as we mentioned before, the water quality, it's a warm water environment. Being a transitional zone, it was only conducive for salmon under ideal conditions. So sometimes you would have a record run that would end up backed up at the when the tributaries were dry, that they'd end up backed up at the obstructions up at the reef, those who could get there. And at other times you would have virtually no production at all because there wasn't sufficient flow. The Klamath wouldn't even be above the surface up there. When they put in the dams, COPCO, they did the mitigation of about half a dozen creeks. The Fish and Game, by the way, even themselves termed marginal habitat. That when they put that in, they did the Fall Creek hatchery in order to mitigate those, which worked fine. But when they did Iron Gate, it was the depth, the cool water depth of the lake that contributed and allowed the unnaturally cold water to be used in the fish hatchery to where they moved that hatchery to, that allowed one of the highest productivity hatcheries, most successful ones in the country. The unnaturally cold water was a first for there and allowed consistent production. And at the time that it was put in, it was extolled as the best in, way to assure the integrity of the salmon populations of any that they'd seen. They were thrilled. Iron Gate supplies salmon all over the world. And to remove that dam removes the cold water contribution that is not typical. In fact, where COPCO is now, they talk about removing that to get this wonderful free-running stream. Before, COPCO was a marsh before that. It was already a shallow, warm-bodied, warm.
Uh-oh. Sounds like we
did. I think we lost him there, so we'll try to get him back.
Oopsie. Well, I can tell you, how about this? How about I don't tell you anything? How about we do a commercial? How'd that be?
We can do that.
Let's do a two-minute break. We'll get ourselves back on track here. We'll call Rex back, and if not, I'll tell you what I saw when I was at COPCO Dam. See you in 2 minutes here on KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
Seconds, say a million I love yous. That's what I'd do with one more day with you. One more day, one more time, one more sunset. Maybe I'd be satisfied, but then again, I know. One more day with you.
Join the conversation in our chat room. KCNR1460.com.
This is my right. A right given by God. To live a free life. To live in. Talking about freedom. I'm talking about freedom. I will fight for the right to live in freedom. Anyone.
Oh, Bob, you keep knocking it out of the park.
I know, people are like, I'm having a hard time putting on my mascara. I keep crying.
Welcome back to We the People Talk Radio. Join us at wethepeopleradio.us. Jump on the chat room. Find out all about our guests today. All of our archive shows. Everything you ever needed to know is right there. And 10 years almost to the minute. 9/11. It was 8:46.
Really?
A.M.
I was getting ready to go to work. Everybody goes, I know where I was.
Yeah, I remember exactly what I was doing.
One of those we remember exactly where we were days. Yeah. So we lost our guest Rex up there. Guest Rex up there. That's a hard one to say.
He was temporarily absconded or something.
Yeah, well, we have lots of speculation on the chat room here. You know, maybe Noah took out the phone line. It was the CIA. Made a mistake on the tap. I mean... Rex, people were getting ready to deploy to come and back you up. Oh, my goodness. goodness. Well, you know, it's funny. It's gotten to a point. I mean, it's not funny, but it's funny strange. It's gotten to a point where I think we're all willing to accept just about anything. Nothing is too bizarre.
Yeah, if you have any kind of an imagination, it's a free day.
Well, all you have to do is really actually pay attention to what's going on, and you realize that fact is stranger than fiction. So, okay, let's zoom back before we hit our news break here at 9 o'clock. Let's zoom back and the hatchery. The hatchery used to supply fish all over the world, does supply fish all over the world. Because of the cold water conditions, and I've seen Kapko Lake. I mean, it is, like, bright green. Like, super bright green.
You have Upper Klamath Lake, as I say, over 58,000 acres, and it's an average of 7 feet deep. It is, with that high phosphorus we're talking about, it is algae-rearing country, which is why they actually made the blue-green algae tablets, life-giving tablets, that were so popular a while ago and still are. It's dumping that water downriver into the system that ends up in Kapko and Iron Gate. They're saying their shallow, warm water body areas that have to be taken out because they're destroying water quality, it's ludicrous. Iron Gate is 944 acres, and surface acres, and Kapko is about 1,000, a mere fraction of Upper Klamath. But Iron Gate is 115 feet high. I mean 173 feet. Kapko is 115. You're looking at some of the deepest, coldest water processing lakes in the entire river system. They actually act as a scrubber and settling pond for removing it. They're a sink for that phosphorus because the algae that they produce there actually settles out. Before Iron Gate, not only in the reduced water flows in late summer, I could walk across the river without getting my feet wet prior to then in late summer, typically. And the algae and moss in the river was a solid mat going across.
Wow.
That was typical. And those are all factors, and yet they also provide a factor for fisheries that are involved, which they don't even acknowledge that yet. They're just now learning factors that people have been telling. Water quality, Department of Water Quality is a huge part of one of the players in this thing, and California Department of Fish and Game for the two primary state agencies. And much of the information that's been trying to be delivered to them over the years with the documentation, with the experience, with the conditions that exist, have fallen on deaf ears until they could get the grant themselves authority over the resources. And now with their new adaptive management, are starting with the new science studies that are coming in supporting the local regions that said that you're destroying the environment by the actions you're taking. They're now saying, oh, we'll adapt it to the conditions as we find them. I use it with that. Since the dams went in, we haven't had a fraction of the moss and the algae in the river. It actually, in our experience, and mine personally even, the riparian stability, the water quality, even the temperatures here, the habitat, all of it is vastly improved over what it was before Iron Gate. And from all of the history we have, it was vastly, greatly improved when they put the dams in originally over 100 years ago. Now remember, at that time it was gold country. They were cutting they were monitor mining entire mountains into the river. They were logging, and what they weren't, they were setting fire to on the trees. The agriculture that existed had far less, for survival, they had far less technology to work with, and so while sustainability was important, they had to work with the means they had, and it was far more destructive. Even the population in Siskiyou County was greater in the 1800s, and during all of this time, during their so-called magnificent salmon runs that they keep claiming existed that were destroyed because of the dams. It's insanity. The dams have been in for over 100 years. The greatest salmon runs that ever been known have occurred after, long after the dams were put in. That's even true with Dwinelle on the Shasta River. Whereas the human impacts are a mere fraction today. I mean a fraction of the percentage of what they were, even in 60 county population at times. The impacts are virtually nil for a fisheries decline by their own statements has only occurred in the last 15 to 20 years. Now explain to me how this decline that has occurred in 15 to 20 years is attributed to a dam system that has been in place for over 100 and human impacts that they're attributing it to that basically have been non-existent almost 50. So we have virtually no logging, virtually no road construction that's taken place. They've shut down everything all during this decline. In the early days, they used to winter 6,000 head of cattle alone on the Klamath every year directly below us. If you can find several hundreds heads of cattle along the entire upper part of the river on our area anymore, I'd be surprised. Basically, most of the places are gone, and yet the rhetoric says that it's these human impacts that they have to mitigate. Coho were never even known to exist in the Upper Klamath, except that by the plantings they've been doing since the 1890s, and they failed. They never were successful in the repeated plantings until the improved conditions from Iron Gate and the hatchery and the water quality after their third attempt with planting coho with a strain from Cascade region actually resulted in a minimal return that basically is their defining is this wild coho protected or threatened species at this time.
You can buy coho salmon at Costco.
Oh, sure. And people
realize that's confusing.
People don't realize that the amount of water going through Iron Gate Dam that all the controversy is about constitutes less than 15% of the water in the estuary of the Klamath.
Wait, say that one more time.
The water coming through Iron Gate that all of this controversy is about comprises less than 15% of the water in the estuary in the Klamath.
What?
The irrigation they're talking about in the upper basin for our brothers up there that all of this is about, that they say is a problem. We need to discuss that too. They're improving the water conditions up there. That's been proven. Dr. Reichbost has done studies on that. But even if they weren't, the amount of water that they're using in the entire upper basin or in the entire agriculture is less than 3% of the water of the Klamath. All of this controversy is about conditions that have absolutely minimal impact in the total concept of the Klamath. The conditions that they're dealing with, they're actually the agriculture on the land that was previously marsh actually uses less water than was lost when the marshes were in place through evaporation, through mitigating evaporation and absorption into the ground. And they act as a sink for the phosphorus that naturally occurs in the water because it's the plants that absorb the phosphorus for their required growth that are hauled off that is the only ability to remove the phosphorus from the water that we practically have, the only practical ability. And yet we're trying to destroy the very benefits to the environment that have been created. I know you have to break.
You're awesome. Look at you go. You think we were giving each other hand signals there over the phone.
No.
Excellent. Okay, we're going to be back talking more about taking out hydropowered dams, which is stupid, here at wethepeopleradio.us. Go to the webpage, check it out in the five-minute break here with the news. You're listening to KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media.
I'm getting so much resistance from behind. Time we stop. Hey, what's that sound?
You're listening to KCNR Shasta Redding.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
To the second hour of We the People Radio. I think you know all the info, but if you are just tuning in, give us a call at 530-605-4567 or go to our webpage at wethepeopleradio.us where we're chatting and streaming live.
And the chat room is always fun. It's not always necessarily concurrent with the program we're talking about.
Sometimes it is.
It's for all of our multitaskers, you know, who are like listening and thinking about other things.
So. Listening, reading the newspaper.
Exactly.
Fighting the fight.
So,
doing it all at once.
The chat room's always a fun place. And just so you guys know, at wethepeopleradio.us, each program has its own page. Literally every Sunday, Robert makes a page for that radio program. And then as soon as we're done with the program, he puts it in archive form. And there is a button there so you can listen to it later. You can email that page to anybody. And then as we update the information from that show, like this show, we're going to add pictures, actual photographs. I took tons of pictures of the area that we're talking about. And I just kind of ran out of time. Sorry. But I'm going to add those pictures afterwards, send them to Robert. So if you check this page in a few days, it's going to look different, and it's going to have some really cool pictures on it. So always do go back to the old shows, especially things that deal with current events or legislation or whatever, and there will be updates on there for you. There's my my brief announcement. And the other thing, too, that we never did announce in the first hour, but I want you guys to remember, is that this program stays on the air because people sponsor it.
Oh, that's right.
this is done through advertising sponsorship and basically friends of the radio.
Yeah, Aaron and I are really bad about asking for money, aren't we?
We suck at that. We're really good at bringing you great programming, but, you know, begging for money isn't something that we excel at, although we should. I mean,
but fortunately, we do have someone... a good friend of ours that has stepped up to the plate and is pushing forward on that for us. So if you want to sponsor the show or you believe in what we're doing, you can contact me, Elizabeth, at wethepeopleradio.us.
And if you have programming ideas, I sort of keep track of the calendar. So if you have programming ideas, it's Erin, E-R-I-N, at wethepeopleradio.us. So if you have read a book recently and you thought the author was just amazing, if you think it's things that fall under the heading of We the People, let us know, and we'll see if we can get them on the show. All right.
Got it.
Blah, blah, blah.
Back to hydroelectric, cleanest form of energy there is.
Yeah. But hydroelectric dams, what a great idea. You know, you can get power from them. You can stop flood control. You can control the water coming out throughout the season so that the fish have a consistent amount of water. But no, if you're the government, you need to take them out now. It was a brilliant idea 50 years ago, 100 years ago, but now it's not brilliant anymore. Now we want floods to reign supreme. We want to let all those heavy metals. And Rex, can you talk a little bit about what will be going down the river when and if they do that?
Oh, absolutely. It'll be just a huge disaster when this happens. Basically, rewilding this will take it back to conditions eventually. Then the long term will, at best, take it back to the degraded natural conditions it was before and inconsistent. But in the proximal period of time, they're going to be dumping what would act for centuries to come as a... for purifying and increasing the water quality below the dams. All of that has been stored up to date will be flushed down the river in one shot. So that they actually fully expect that's the contradictions that exist in all of this that has been going on. Even their own studies are now confirming what the locals have been saying for years, and yet they still continue to move forward. They're saying that the excuse for removing the dams is so they can get salmon up to an area that historically was never conducive and never known to exist in numbers, and to support the natural salmon that have actually been the hatchery fish are DNA identical salmon taken from the local regions. Over 40% of those fish and returning are known and proven to respawn, repopulate in the other tributaries of the main stem of the Klamath. That means over the years that those salmon are all the same salmon. That are taken from the same river and spawned and reared up in the hatchery. But when they remove the dams, the hatchery basically is defunct. It cannot operate now because they've lost the cold water from the dam. They have the most conservative estimate of the actual amount of sediment that will go down is over 21 million cubic yards.
Wow.
That is going to re-release all of that phosphorus and other accumulated nutrients and contaminants back into the stream that they fully expect will extirpate the salmon.
What does that mean?
It'll kill them all off.
Yeah, we don't know any good fish in science talk.
Yeah, all of the salmon will die. And they expect, their main concern is this will happen for years. Remember what I said about the adobe soil and about how grandfather's brown water. This area, being high desert, does not revegetate very easily, very quickly, and it doesn't have soil stability with it. So every time it gets wet, you're going to have erosion back down into the area. It would be many, many years before they would ever gain enough stability to prevent that. If they're most conservative, they've reduced it tremendously since their original estimates to make it sound better. At approximately 20 million cubic yards, nobody knows for sure. It will resediment with the high phosphorus soils and contaminants all the way downriver. Salmon have a 3 to 5 year life cycle, most of which spend in the ocean, of course, which is where the primary factors are that have been proven to affect the populations. In fact, 2008 Columbia Salmon Study, Sockeye Salmon Study, proved that the dams actually had, in the riparian areas, have virtually no effect on the Columbia River on the salmon numbers. There no other conclusion. In fact, the 2008 Columbia Fraser River study also proved, ironically, that the dam Columbia has a higher survivability of salmon than the unfettered and pristine Fraser River. Well, that same kind of thing is happening here. What you're going to see in that 3 to 5 years, if it wipes out the salmon respawning through that period of time, that portion of the population is gone. So their justification for pulling it out to save the wild salmon is totally countered by the expectation of what's going to occur. So, but they're saying they want to get rid of the hatchery, but in the KHSA, the Klamath Basin Hydroelectric Agreement, which is affiliated with the other so-called agreement of stakeholders, almost very few of which actually have vested interest in the area, or consequence of decision, in those agreements, they all acknowledge that the ratepayers of the for the power generated from Pacific Power from those dams that will be removed are going to pay for either drilling wells up there to replace the water to the hatchery to support it, which is not likely to happen. If they understood the geology of the area and the wells, they'll never get enough cold water. It's about a 1 in 1,000 chance in our area. In fact, more likely that they would end up with boron and arsenic-laden groundwater of insufficient quantity and of temperature. They do realize that enough that after they drill wells with our money, that and it fails, then we get to pay millions of dollars to build or relocate a new hatchery elsewhere in order to try and supply the salmon. Now, this is to supply wild salmon for the area, right?
That you already have that are perfectly fine the way it is.
Yeah, but and yet Fish and Wildlife, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, who's also another big player in this and part of the ceded Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement members, proudly announced about 2 years ago that they have already taken a proactive stance, that they are now researching and attempting to rear salmon from genetically superior salmon from this and other watersheds. That's their quote. In anticipation of stocking salmon in the area when they're going to try and introduce, and I say is introduce, not reintroduce, into the upper basin. So they're talking about wild salmon, but they're bringing in genetically superior stocks from other basins in order to stock them. How many, I could go on for hours of the contradictions of things that they are doing. They're telling the public on one hand because it sounds warm and fuzzy, and on the other hand are doing exactly the opposite. The problem is that in doing this, the ultimate goal, I've been able to arrive, and others too, and this is a lot of the multi-generationals and the people who understand nature in the area enough. Over 80% of Siskiyou County voted against dams removal, which is where three of the four dams are located, slated for removal, and the preponderance of the Klamath River.
That's right. That was on the ballot just recently.
Yes, it was on the ballot. Of course, it carries no weight politically, but...
But it wasn't just like a survey of 20 people. I mean, it was a county-wide ballot initiative.
Yeah, was with the people who put that on the ballot, who urged the supervisors to put it on, were trying to get the information out to the public with the change in their pockets. I mean, this was personal issues that people were going out and drawing up signs to put up to try and inform the people of the ballot and please vote your conscience and what you thought. This was in the face of tens of thousands of dollars being targeted through the KBRA members through a group called Prosper, which was largely taxpayer, is traced to taxpayers' money, and Cal Trout, who is the arm, of course, of basically one of the biggest funders is Department of Fish and Game.
And on that note, we have to take a quick break. Okay. And people can ponder that the head of Cal Trout was just named as... Oh, he's their chief legal counsel, too, or was. Now he's the head of Fish and Game. Yeah. Da, 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 da. Okay, we'll be right back with you. We're going to talk to Rex some more about the Klamath dams. Let's see. We're here at KCNR, 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
Now this nation that I love is falling under attack. A mighty sucker punch came flying in from somewhere in the back. As soon as we could see clearly through our big black eye, man, we lit up your world like the 4th of July. Uncle Sam put your name at the top of his list, and the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist, and the eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here. When you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell, and it'll feel like the whole
if your tax advisor tells you your legal deductions are red flags, it's time for North State Consultants in Reading. Our team specializes in reducing your tax liability using IRS policies and administrative law. As the most aggressive and qualified tax preparation and audit litigation specialists in the business, we offer tax and trust assistance with audits, late filings, overdue taxes, and more. For more information, visit our website at northstateconsultants.com.
Hear us streaming 24/7 on KCNR1460.com.
In my dreams, I'll always see you soar above the sky. In my heart, there'll always be a place for you for all my life. I'll keep a part of you with me, and everywhere I am, there you'll be.
remembrance of all of the victims and the families whose lives were changed forever from 9/11, we welcome you back to We the People Radio.
On this sunny Sunday morning. Well, we are talking about other events, actually equally catastrophic for the folks involved. I tell you what, everybody seems to be in the middle of something, you know, whether it's a family thing or a job thing or, you know, there are even people who had fairly secure portfolios, that's all changing. You know, you have people who have farms and ranches and the government is on them like a pack of locusts, or what are locusts? They're probably not packs, are they? A flock of locusts? I'm not sure. But my favorite one is a group of buzzards is called a committee.
How about a swarm of locusts?
There you go.
That's what we were looking for. That's why we have an engineer. Yeah, so anyway, this is just nutty. And, you know, Rex, before we get too far down the hole here, because we're into our last, like, 40 minutes, talk to folks about the politics of this thing, because that's really where the rubber meets the road. I mean, the science is good for people to understand, obviously, because it makes it even more stupid. But talk to them about the politics. That's what you and I were talking about up there at Pacific Corp.
The politics are frightening with this whole thing. As I said, the voice of the people of the majority in the region has been totally ignored and suppressed throughout this thing by media, within the rhetoric that's out there. Over 80% of Siskiyou County, as we said, voted against it. Not only that, but while there are several hugely benefiting tribes seating on this agreement council, I mentioned, and I'll bring up later, but the actual tribe that was indigenous to the area here, whose Aboriginal lands were on the where the dams now exist, and the majority of the river in Siskiyou County, were from the Shasta tribe. The Shasta tribe is against dams removal, and yet they have not been allowed a voice within this entire process. That's the kind of of political maneuvering that's taken place within this. In the 90s, the first records that we can find going back into the things in the late 90s, a number of agencies and environmental groups basically started a loose-knit cooperation, and there was some correspondence that actually showed that they decided that the pending relicensing of Pacific Power that was due in 2006, I believe, at the time, would be an outstanding opportunity to institute a rewilding effect. And they wanted to bring in some cooperating Indian tribal council, I'm sure, to gain media coverage or to make a so-called united front, in order to capitalize on the opportunity for this rewilding. They a number of these different groups that they now call them stakeholders, which ironically it infers the public, they have an interest in the area that's there, a vested interest, when by definition a stakeholder has no interest in the area. And most of these people have no interest, no vested interest, no consequence, no investment in the area for any decisions they make or damages that are done. They individually then would perform their own so-called studies, usually traced back to, again, public monies or contributed monies, for these studies that they submitted to the FERC, which is the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, excuse me. There's so many acronyms, and that's part of the diversion, too. They love to create so many diverse acronyms that are out there that it totally confuses people and makes it seem like it's all these diverse groups that are all united in their cause, when in reality, when you start tracing them back, they all come back to a relative handful of agencies and individuals. It's remarkable.
And they're all getting way more than just a handful of money.
Oh my gosh, they're looking at, and I'll go back to that after, but they're looking at sharing, splitting up $2.5 billion under the agreement of taxpayer ratepayer money if they can get this thing through.
That's two and a half billion with a B, right?
With a B,
yeah, okay.
and that's the minimum estimate. And we know how that goes. It was $1 billion projected for the KBRA to disperse as they see fit before dams removal, $1 billion afterwards, and nearly half a billion for dams removal, which is extremely underrated. There's only one way they're going to achieve that when the original projection by CDM could have been upwards of $2 billion for removal. And more if the sediment had to be removed. But anyway, this group, the individual, they submitted a wish list of all the mitigations that would have to be done before the FERC, the Federal Relicensing, would grant a license to Pacific Power. Now, remember that during this time, all these different groups are also filing lawsuits to Pacific Power all of the time for supposed detriment to the area, which was also ludicrous, but very costly, and it falls back to the company and to the ratepayers involved too, and is a continued liability risk. But so these outfit put all in this wonderful wish list. Now, many of these things in FERC, and FERC Commission accepted them as required mitigations for the dams to continue operation. They constituted hundreds of millions of dollars of requirements, that many of which had absolutely nothing to do with dams operation or influence or impact. It was all these wonderful projects that they were going to do to improve environments there and elsewhere, and to build ATV trails. All of a sudden.
Oh, yeah, anything I'm sure they'll be doing that.
Oh, anything they could do to increase the cost, to make it economically unfeasible for Pacific Power to exist. They created six options under FERC that they would consider. One recommended, out of those six options, only two of them would even economically allow Pacific Power to exist. Only one of those that was recommended, there was a do-nothing plan that basically allowed them to make a minimal amount of profit. For the electricity they generate that supplies over 70,000 homes, it's some of the lowest electrical rates at that time in the country, in the western U.S., the rates were excellent. Under this new wish list they have, it would push the cost of operation up so high that it made it even questionable for existence. Under the recommended option, Pacific Power would have the ability in a good year maybe to make a profit. In a not good year, they wouldn't. That put them in a bind to start with. Then all of these same groups kind of got together, and they started creating this agreement council that they were doing. By the agencies, the tribes involved, they created this group on the heels of the 2001 suckerfish shutdown and the 2002 salmon die-off, both of which are being misquoted to the public tremendously, and I'd be happy to get into that if we have the time.
Yeah, you know what? Okay, let's take a really quick break here.
Okay.
And on the break, I want people to go to wethepeopleradio.us. We've just uploaded an image there that will give you the entire story all in one fell swoop. And I'm not going to tell you what it is. I'll give you a chance to look at it when we come back. For those people that are on the real radio and not looking on the computer, we'll tell you what it is. So you're listening to We the People Radio here. We're talking to Rex up there in Siskiyou County about the hydropower dams that the idiot government wants to take out. Good grief. And we'll be right back with you here on KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
Don't you dare on me. hotline is open on KCNR 1460, 530-605-4567.
When the cry went out on 911, the hero heard the call. There was terror in the skies above, with little time to stop. Then he told the other passengers, let's roll. Let's roll, America. There's a job to be done. Let's roll, America. There's a battle to be won. Wake up, America. You're too young.
This, wow. This is to all the heroes, past and present. You know who you are. Welcome back to We the People Radio.
And the call goes out to all the heroes that we need. Good grief. That ought to be our theme song for this show. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's a great one. Thanks again, Bob.
That's the Bellamy Brothers, by the way.
Love it.
I mentioned that not only because they're one of our 70s artists, you'll know from Let Your Love Flow, their big number one hit, but they're also going to be at the Cascade Theater on November 6th here in Reading.
Oh,
get out.
Great.
Look at you. You're a font of information.
Yes.
I had no idea.
Well, we're all the same generation sitting here around this this studio table, so that kind of helps.
And I'm wearing my fair shirt because I'm headed up to the Tule Lake Fair later today. And on the back, because they're trying to, California budget, they're trying to kill the fairs, you know. So on the back, got a big Ferris wheel, and in the middle of the Ferris wheel, it says, Save Ferris, in really huge print. You know, like from Ferris Bueller's Day Off. And then underneath it says Wheels. So it's like, Save Ferris. And if you look at it close, Wheels. And
very cute.
Only people who watch Ferris Bueller's Day Off get the shirt. And even some of them have forgotten, but some just crack up when they see it.
I hadn't seen the movie in about 30 years. But that's a great reference.
Little obscurity there. All right, so we need to, and we have buttons that say, I'm a dam hugger, by the way, speaking of little theme things. So if you'd like a dam hugger button, you need to let us know, and we'll get one to you, so you can be a dam hugger, too. All right, we're back with Rex, and we were talking about the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement, commonly referred to as the KBRA. And what's the KHSA, Rex? What's that, the Klamath?
Klamath Hydroelectric Settlement Agreement.
They're
actually... hand in hand.
They're kind of interchangeable, huh?
Yes, they were both in essence largely created by the Secretary of Interior, which tells you a lot right there. But anyway,
yeah, that's another bad story.
Yeah, and that to go back just to very briefly say that the 2001 suckerfish, when they shut off the water to farmers, that created that crisis. Over 1,200 people lost their homes and futures at that time through that. Single arbitrary shutdown alone, based on numbers that they have now proven were either falsified or fabricated, on suckerfish, and that in order to raise water levels to support them, which the locals, the very ones who lost those futures, knew and said would be the worst thing they could do to save suckerfish, that the government failed in eradicating, trying to eliminate them several times in the past.
And all took place where, Rex?
That was in the Upper Klamath Basin. That actually is the basis for forcing the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement.
So it's literally pressing its way down the Klamath Basin now, and as
encompasses the entire basin now through cooperation of Department of California Fish and Game is also a seated member, and water quality actually debated about being a member and decided it would carry more credibility, I think, if they didn't weren't a seated member, so they're actually tied in. They're one of the driving forces, too, of enforcement of the agreement through memorandums of agreement and working in cooperation with them and Oregon Water Quality to create the means, the regulations, the permits, and the justification for taking control of the resources in the region. and carrying out a lot of the premises and decisions in the KBRA. Well, that the 2001 situation put a lot of pressure on agriculture. They could see the writing on the wall. 2002, they had a fish die-off, a salmon die-off down below, which the locals all knew. We knew the very day that it happened what the cause was, primary cause. They've since also found out there was a methamphetamine down below, but this is for a die-off that occurred over 120 miles downstream, which was the National Research Council actually came out with that they do not believe that it was from had no connection to low flows coming out of the Klamath, out of Iron Gate, which environmentalists and the rhetoric still purports, tries to create an allusion to for the public. In fact, the flows at that time were, I felt, were too high for sustainability flow out of Iron Gate in our region, which historically have been far less in the past during record runs that have taken place. But anyway, that's been used by proponents for removals, the 2002 die-off that they had. Oh, and in the public, which you'll also never see in written in the press, is that record run, it was not a one-time thing. This has happened infrequently through the past in a combination of rare occurrences, day and warm day and night temperatures, and that coinciding with salmon run. And that run that they say killed so many salmon down there was actually a small percentage. It was one of the largest salmon runs they've had, and the numbers that came through up the river was still one of the largest runs that they've had in the past. They don't tell the public that. But anyway, they used that, both of those instances, to create pressure on the region and in the public for this agreement that they are this council they were going to put together to create an agreement that would solve everything. To do that, they needed some agricultural representation from the area, since most of the people seated in the council had no connection with the area whatsoever. They're environmentalists and agencies, and they were either agencies with public lands or they were non-vested. So they put a call out for the member for agriculture who sit at the table. The trouble is, the objective of this has become apparent for the group, was to implement two conditions for sitting at the table. This is prior to any scientific justification for any of it. The two conditions to set at the table was agreement to dams removal. If you did not agree to dams removal, as I understand, you were not allowed to even sit at the table. The other condition, which is even as important, if not more so, was you had to agree to a tiered hierarchy of resource management. Up until now, we operated and still theoretically are supposed to operate under the Klamath Basin Compact, which was approved by Congress, and it basically creates an even-based resource management use of the waters. Agriculture certainly carried an equal, if not greater, use up there. But it was basically across the board, it was fairly balanced use. Under their agreement, which was created in secret, this was not made open to the public, even though it involved government agencies, and it was not discussed. In fact, you had to agree to non-disclosure and cooperation if you sat at the table. Under those secret meetings to form this, you had to agree to a tiered hierarchy where fish were first. That means federal and state government control of resources. Tribes were second. While they didn't own the water, but they would have ability to direct for where water went for purposes of hunting and traditional hunting and gathering. Then you had the agriculture, who was represented and sitting at the table, who would get third tier, basically, and the wildlife refuge would get fourth. Well, in the last year, they've actually reversed that, as I understand it. Now wildlife refuges third, and agriculture is fourth, which tells you a lot off the top. That agriculture, most of them who tried to sit there at first knew that this would be a disaster to the region, the conditions, it would fall on everybody. And so they ended up, through the witnessing the manipulations and maneuvering that were going on, they pulled out. The less than 10% of agriculture represented up there in the meetings that agreed out of desperation, I don't blame anybody for survival, but in exchange for guarantees of water, that left the vast majority of all of the rest of agriculture and the regional community, they're out. They're gone. So this council is the one, through their agreement, that would dictate and direct what the controls are and where the allocations would go, and with fish first and with no historical justification for their directions, they've created water requirements that are completely unjustified for support of the salmon. And under their conditions, they don't have to justify it. If they get this through, the KBRA, they created this so-called agreement. Then the Secretary of Interior, in conjunction with the two governors of Oregon and California, decided to implement the KBRA, and to get it funded and authorized, they had to get Pacific Power to agree to remove the dam. So they created, that's why the connection, the KHSA, the Klamath Hydroelectric Settlement Agreement. And they told Pacific Power, hey, you guys got a problem. You know, you got ongoing litigation. You've got all these requirements if you're going to relicense that make you unprofitable. And so we will offer you an agreement in exchange for you sitting at the table to discuss dams removal. We will give you all kinds of concessions. We will give you congressionally authorized liability protection for any damages that are done for them or any of the other members there, for damages done to the environment for removal of the dam should they occur. If they could give them congressional protection for removal of the dams, then they certainly could give it for protection for existence of the dams. But of course, that wasn't on the table.
No, we never seem to look. Seem to look at the flip side. Okay, we've got to take a quick break here, and we will come back with the final 15 minutes on the Klamath Dams. So, if you have questions, you better call us right when we come back from commercial. Your number to call is 530-605-4567, and Rex is going to wrap this hour up with us here on KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
Tax advisor tells you your legal deductions are red flags, it's time for North State Consultants in Reading. Our team specializes in reducing your tax liability using IRS policies and administrative law. As the most aggressive and qualified tax preparation and audit litigation specialists in the business, we offer tax and trust assistance with audits, late filings, overdue taxes, and more. For more information, visit our website at northstateconsultants.com.
Join the conversation in our chat room, KCNR1460.com.
Have you forgotten all the people killed? Yes, some went down like heroes in that Pennsylvania field. Have you forgotten about our Pentagon? All the loved ones that we lost and those left to carry on. Have you forgotten?
I don't think that I'll ever forget. How about you, Bob? How about you, Aaron?
Nope.
I will never forget. I had to be on the radio. That it's hard enough being on the radio today, but it was really hard being on the radio that particular morning.
Oh, I'll bet it was. I'll bet that was tough.
So, do you never think about that stuff?
No, and, you know, we weren't wired where I was working. We weren't wired for a 24-hour news network or anything like that. We were just getting information coming in bits at a time that morning, and it was very...
And you had to just read it live, huh?
Yeah, very confusing time, and I really didn't process it. I didn't allow myself to process it and break down or anything like that. I was just focused on getting information out to the listeners best that I could.
Wow.
We were working in Quincy at the time at a little station.
Yeah, that would be nice. Time.
Yeah. 9/11, the big heads up. And now we seem to have 9/11 every week somewhere. Mm-hmm. And recently it's coming to a town near you through Siskiyou County.
You know, I don't know if you have anything that you wanted to wrap up with, Rex, but for me, yeah. I would like to know what your world and our world would look like if this attempt to take out the dams or at least disable them is successful.
Absolutely. To just tie up with those other things there, on that agreement that they have, the hydroelectric agreement, they actually incorporate in there then the not only the determination where the secretary grants himself ability to determine subjectively whether the dam should come out in best interest. That agreement also incorporates the Klamath Basin Agreement in it. And all of the concessions that will be paid to Pacific Power are being paid for out by the unrepresented at the table, the ratepayers and the taxpayers, of course, at this also secretly held meeting that they had involving public funds. That was all in secret, and to sit at the table, you had to agree to cooperation and non-disclosure. Under that agreement, which is now going before Congress, I understand is being circulated right now. They would give the KBRA, once ratified, 50 years of chartered authority. Unbridled chartered authority, where this unelected group, their self-appointed members in there, will have complete and protected from liability for any damages for the decisions they cause to the environment, for a 50-year period, funded for them to determine where those funds, how they're going to be split up and dispersed among the groups that are there, and to what purpose. That funding and that authorization for secretarial determination, I guess, is actually circulating right now through Congress. The secretary, who actually was instrumental in some of the conditions at the original agreement that mandated removal of the dams, remember, before any scientific basis for it was justified to sit at the table, is going to make the determination whether or not the conditions that he helped to create and the agreement he helped to create are in the interest of the public. That determination is coming up shortly, as recommended by the unbiased scientific agencies that operate directly under his authority. So that's coming up. If that happens, what's going to happen? You have two parts. One is the removal of the dams, which will absolutely devastate our region. It is going to destroy everything that has been gained through generations of improvement to the environment that have accumulated. Our forefathers were not dumb. They were not idiots. Sometimes I think we are to even consider such a thing. But you want to continue to improve and optimize the system and the benefits that have been created, not destroy them and start all over. That is not conducive. The other part that is equally disastrous, even if the dam somehow, if they couldn't find money for it, if it wasn't going to happen, although from all of the mitigation and restoration they were promising before, it is now devolved into, well, we're just going to blow and go. We're going to blow a hole. We think that by blowing a hole in the dam, it'll save lots of money, and it'll be just as good. We don't have to move anything. It'll all flush down and be right as rain in a year or two. that even if he decided for some reason that that was not necessary, by approval of the integrated KBRA, they will bring in requirements and goals that are already being put in place right now through the Klamath water quality requirements that they're finalizing now, and which they've done on the Shasta and the Scott. All of those requirements will culminate in an unending and unachievable goal that will eventually have no option but to attrition the majority of people in the region. And I think that ultimately, with all of the science that's going against it, with all of the history and experience going against their suppositions, I can't conclude anything, and many others, that that isn't the intent. The intent is to rewild. The problem is nature does not care if man lives or dies. Nature is, if they bring it back to the conditions that it was before, you eliminate any consistent production that allows to benefit and sustain both the natural environment here and mankind. It will not happen. You can't eradicate consistent, optimized production of nature and still be able to have man survive. Even the wildlife, the natural conditions prevailing at that time in our transition zone were extremely risky and subject to infestations, to disease, to total elimination of habitats for given periods of time. It's only by the improvements that have been made by man that have allowed the enhancement of the environment to be able to sustain and be consistently productive and allow enough production on top for the sustainability of man. That will be destroyed. What they'll do is end up eradicating the majority of population from the region and virtually all the benefits. We've seen it happen already. That's the trouble. This is not supposition. We saw it with the forest shutdowns when we said, if you shut down the forest, we're going to lose, not only lose all the resources and benefits to man, we are going to have devastation to the environment, and right now we are breathing the smoke of that devastation. And rather than correcting their decisions, they've simply changed history by saying that that was the result of policies over 30 years ago, it's global warming, and besides that, it's good for the environment with all of the destruction to the streams, to the erosion, to the areas that are subject to century cycle of burning brush now. And many of those same people involved in it then simply moved to the mouth of the Klamath, and now they're using the coho as the spotted owl to further this process.
Oh, that's right. We told people we'd tell them about the picture, and the picture is a coho salmon with a spotted owl head.
That's right. We need people to try and contact their representatives right now. Try and urge them. Do not support either the dam's removal or the authorization of the KBRA. It takes that control, the responsibility. The local people who have generations vested into the experience, the mistakes, the problems, and the occurrences in nature will no longer be able to make any decisions, effective decisions regarding their property. This is a taking of property. It's the way to circumvent condemnation with compensation.
Thank you, Rex. We're going to have you back. As always, 2 hours is never enough.
Time.